In today's masterclass episode, I am interviewing Victor Juracek out of Gainesville, Florida. He's a fix and flip investor out there doing roughly between 20 and 30 deals a year. And in this episode, you know, it's really interesting and cool to hear Victor's perspective on the relationship between wholesaler and rehabber. And he came from the wholesaling side of things. So he understands how wholesalers, the work that and effort that it takes to source these deals, qualify the leads, get them under contract, market them. And so he shares a lot about how, if you're listening to this and you're a fix and flip investor, or even if you're a wholesaler, how you can have a more cooperative and collaborative relationship with each other versus a combative one. And I share some maybe creative ways that you can work together with either a rehabber or a wholesaler to get more deals done, you know, and we talk about his best deal, his worst deal, lessons learned, and everything in between. So one quick thing before we hop into today's episode, I've had a lot of people a couple of weeks ago, you know, or last month, actually, we had our Ascend Mastermind retreat. And I guess because a lot of the pictures and videos and things that people were tagging me in, I've had quite a few people reaching out wanting to learn more about it. So if that's you, it's not for everybody. Ascendyoursuccess.com. If you want to, if you have a desire to not just grow your business, but expand your impact and have an experience in the process, be a part of a community of other like-minded high-level entrepreneurs and investors, ascendyoursuccess.com. So with that note, let's hop into this episode with Victor Juracek.
You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's going on, my friends? You know me, Alex Pardo, back here on the Flip Empire Show, and I got Victor Juracek, and I'm excited to have him on the podcast. So, Victor, let me just kind of set the stage, man. I see you doing a lot of cool things on social media in your fix and flip business out in Gainesville, Florida. And I also have to tell you, and this is a compliment, man, is you have a unique and subtle way to follow up with people and be pretty persistent without being a pain in the ass, which is cool. So you have that, like, you have that subtle balance. And so maybe at some point or another, we talk about that, but it's awesome to get you in the show, man.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So why don't we, so people that might not know you or be connected with you on Facebook or on social media, tell us about kind of your beginnings, how you transitioned into being a full-time real estate investor and having a successful fix and flip company.
Yeah, for sure. So again, my name is Victor. I'm out of Gainesville, Florida. So did about 20 flips last year. This is like fix and flips, 30 flips this year is the goal. I focus primarily on the fix and flips. I've done, you know, wholesales, rentals, all that sort of stuff. I actually got into it. I was in the corporate world, or kind of corporate world, more like an administrator for a home health agency, and just realized that, like, I wasn't really getting ahead where I wanted to go financially. Didn't really enjoy the work. Not that there's anything against it, just wasn't for me. Yep. And always had this, like, real estate bug, like, hey, I want to, you know, do this on my own. I want to, it always like in the back of my mind, like, what about, it was always like, I want to do this and then I can get into real estate. I want to do this and then I can get into real estate. Like, let's make money in healthcare and then I can get into real estate. And then I realized, like, why not just start with real estate? And that's the way I started. And then basically got connected through a friend of a friend to our mutual contact, Chris Chico.
Yeah.
And he taught me the ropes, like wholesaling, cold calling, a little bit of Facebook ads, and transitioned to fix and flip. And, you know, the rest is history.
Yep, absolutely. I'll give Chico a plug here. So Chico's a really good friend of mine. He puts out some phenomenal products and services. Mm-hmm. And so many people have come up through Chris Chico. If you guys want to check out one of his courses, flipempire.com/leads. Yeah, no, Victor. So I want to kind of hit the pause button before we keep going with the interview and sure. Back up. You said something that kind of just jumped out at me. You know, you said, I wanted to do this before I got into real estate. And I think there's probably people listening to this or watching this at some point that have been there or there right now where they want to do something, but they feel they have to keep going on the path they're on. Yeah. What was it for you that ultimately got you to say, hey, I don't have to continue to go down this path with my job. I can just jump into real estate. Like, what gave you that courage and the conviction to go ahead and do that?
So what happened was, what's interesting, this is really good for your listeners too. Like, what I was doing about that time, I found out about the Chris Chico, like, he was getting, like, Facebook deals from Facebook. So that, like, really baffled me. So it was about, like, 6 months. I was trying to convince others, like, hey, you should look at this. You know, you should do this. You should do this. And then that's when I finally realized, like, and this is good for your listeners, so that's why I mention it. Like, if you are trying to convince someone else to do it, like, you're really projecting, and that's what you want to do. So that's what I found out, because I wanted to get into real estate. I wanted to do it, but I was trying to get others to do it. I was actually trying to get myself to do it. So what really changed, basically, I found out it started to come to the realization, like, hey, this job isn't going to get me where I want to go. So I don't think it was like one miracle moment or like one aha moment, like one insight. I think it was just the accumulation of things where I would, the month would end and I'm like, hey, I've saved an extra $500. And like, I wouldn't be getting towards my financial goals. And I would quickly find out like, wait a second, like this isn't working. This is not going to happen. And that's basically how it came to be.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love the fact that you actually decided to do something, because there's so many people that just get stuck and they don't take that leap because of fear or whatever the case might be. And I'm like you, you and I came from a corporate background, and it sounds like for you, I knew that there was no way I could continue to go down that path and build the kind of life that I wanted to live. So when you got into real estate, I know you said that, you know, you kind of went through Chris's training and you started wholesaling, it sounds like.
That's right. So I happened to connect with Chris. He had a mentorship program at the time. We talked about that. It basically was out of my budget. But he mentioned like, hey, I had to get rid of my cold caller. Like, she wasn't working out. I need a new cold caller. So if you want to join me as like an acquisitions person, commission only, you know, hop on and join me. It's like, yeah, let's do it. I'm in. So that's how I learned. I got to learn from him one-on-one and started, you know, trying to get some deals. And that's a different story. We actually didn't get any deals together, you know, working together in Miami and cold calling in Miami. And like, they're so competitive and just didn't get any traction.
Got it. What year was this, Victor?
That was 2018.
2018. Okay, got it. So dude, in a relatively short amount of time, you built a pretty good company here doing, you know, between 20 and 30 deals a year. And we were talking about this before we recorded. I don't want people to think, because of the narrative that's perpetuated on Facebook about scale and all these number of deals, like, you don't have to do that many deals to live a pretty damn good life, you know? So talk to me about kind of your growth year over year. I know you said that you guys are on pace and the goal is to do 30 flips this year. I want to hear about your growth year over year. And I also would like to hear, when you started working with Chico, like, at what point did you go from, okay, I'm going to wholesale to I'm going to start fixing and flipping?
Yeah. So what happened? So Chico and I were working together for Miami, like cold calling Miami. Just didn't get a lot of traction. We parted ways as friends. And I said, hey, I'm going to focus on a different market. I was going to focus on Gainesville and then started cold calling there. It was just night and day difference. Like, I was really, like, really, you know, getting, talking to people. They want to talk to me. Like, they said, like, oh, I've never talked to anybody else about selling this property and I want to sell to you. So like, okay, cool. Got some traction. First deal was a wholesale deal, made about $3,000. Second deal was a wholesale deal, made about $3,500. I was going to wholesale another one. I couldn't find a buyer. Back then, Gainesville was a bit more like an infant market, you know, still a smaller market, not a lot of big players there. And I would send people there, like cash buyers, and they would want home run deals. They're like, I want to make, there's like a little property, they're like, I want to make 50K net. And like, you know, buying at 100,000 and, you know, selling for 200,000, that's kind of tough. Like, you got to get the thing for almost for free. So people wanted home run deals, and I had this really good deal where I figured I can just take it down myself, you know, because I didn't have any options. I'm like, this is a good deal. I know it. I've run the numbers over and over again. It has potential. Let's take it down myself. Problem was the following. I didn't have money. So I didn't have money. I had maybe a couple thousand in the bank, low 500 credit score, and didn't have the money.
So what'd you do?
Yeah, no, good question. So what I did, basically reached out to my network, found what I call as like a money partner. So I found the deal. I would help with the renovations or help manage it. I would help, you know, sell the property, and they would put in the money, to buy it, to renovate it, to sell it. And then we would split the profit. So instead of them having money sitting in the bank, making, you know, 0.1% interest, they could put it towards like a real tangible asset. And I could show them like, hey, here's the comps, here's all that good stuff. Yeah. And it was something real. So it's like, hey, do you want your money to sit in the bank account, or do you want to make, you know, 20 or 10, 20,000 on the flip?
I love that, Vic. What's really jumping out at me is in the previous podcast with Javier, you know, we talked about the fact that sometimes people try to approach this business, and I'm sure you can relate, and trying to want to do everything themselves. Mm. And what's so cool about the business that we're in, as you know, Victor, is that you don't have to have all the pieces of the puzzle. You just have to bring one major component or contribute one factor to the deal. For you, you found the deal and you were going to be the sweat equity, like you were going to actually run the rehab. All you needed was the money. And the money, especially nowadays, that's the easy part. Like, if you find the deal and you got someone that's willing to run the project, the money will be thrown at you. And you found that where some people just might let that opportunity go because they couldn't solve that one issue. So think about how you can find ways to add value to deals and get a piece of the deal versus always having to get the whole thing.
No, spot on. And especially now, I like to teach people, like, you know, tell people, like, it's not about the money, it's about the deal. Like, if you get a good enough deal, just like you said, or use the same words as you, like, people will throw money at you to get the deal done, just because where we're at in the market, and, you know, deals are tight and money's plenty. So, you know,
gotta
take advantage of it.
Absolutely. So how are you guys finding deals now?
So about half come from wholesalers and about half I source on my own. I have like kind of a more unique strategy when it comes to like dealing with wholesalers. It's not combative, it's cooperative. I mean, that comes from my wholesaling background. So I know what it's like. I know how much effort it takes to like get a deal, negotiate with a seller, get it under contract. And then for a cash buyer to like beat you up over like $1,000 or $2,000, like that's not fun. And then they go out and make, you know, 40,000 on it and they beat you up over 2,000. So I didn't like that. So I try to like build relationships with wholesalers, just try to make it as easy as possible on their side. Like, hey, this is what I got for ARV. This is what I got for repairs. This is what my offer is. Like just being truthfully transparent and, you know, sharing everything and just saying like, hey, this is where I'm at. Can you work with me? And just building a relationship that way.
Got it. I like the fact that you said cooperative versus combative, because any wholesaler or rehabber that's listening right now or watching us can relate to that. You know, how it doesn't have to be you on the other side of the table and us negotiating. We could be side by side trying to, basically what we're doing is partnering together to get the deal closed is the way I look at it. So basically, is your process then with wholesalers to build relationships and then just be like uber transparent with them about, hey, here are my numbers, and kind of explaining to them why you're making a certain offer or where you would need to be?
No, that's spot on. Just going above and beyond, where sometimes a wholesaler sends me a deal. He doesn't even have it under contract yet. He's like still, he or she is still negotiating it. And they're asking me like, hey, where do you need to be on this property for it to be a deal? So you want to be like their number one, like their trusted source, like you're actually helping them and like adding value. So it's not just, you know, send me a deal when you have one. It's like broken into houses for people. Like they're like, hey, I can't get in the door. So like,
if you're not watching this and you're listening to this on the podcast, Victor just used air quotes when he said broken into houses. So just for the benefit of people listening, right? He didn't really, he got into houses, you know, on behalf of the wholesaler, right? But dude, this is really important that we're talking about this, because I want wholesalers and rehabbers to hear me loud and clear. If you're a rehabber, one of the things I always appreciated when I ran the wholesaling operation, and I know my disposition manager appreciated this too, is two things from rehabbers. We never wanted to work with rehabbers or fix and flip investors that were so concerned about counting our profits, right? Because you said sometimes they don't realize or know or care to know how much time, effort, and energy and money it takes to source these leads and to comb through the non-qualified leads and everything that goes involved in getting a deal. And we always appreciated rehabbers and fix and flip investors that said, hey man, I don't care how much you make. I know you guys work your tails off for this. I just want a good deal. And this is what a good deal looks like to me. That's the first thing we appreciated. We almost shot those people to the top of the list. The second thing we appreciated is when we knew we could trust them. So the fact that you just said, hey, wholesalers will come to me without having it under contract and say, hey, where do you need to be? That tells me that they trust you. And that's insanely valuable. So as a rehabber listening to this, think about how you can build that trust, have the open lines of communication. Your goal should be that wholesalers tell you, hey, I don't have this under contract, but I trust you. Tell me where you need to be, because that really helps the wholesaler.
Oh, no. Yeah, I love it. And you really pulled out golden nuggets on those. Spot on. That's what I've been seeing too. And then also, like, I try to provide a deep breakdown. Like, this is how I got ARV. Here are my comps. If you have better comps, happy to look at them. Like, I can use those comps. So, like, really getting that transparent, that granular. Also, if I have a repair budget, I don't say, like, hey, repair is 50K. I say, kitchen is this much, flooring is this much, you know, paint is this much. There seems to be a gap, especially with wholesalers and their knowledge, and that's totally fine. That's not their forte. That's not what they focus on. Like, how do you estimate repairs? So I see some beginner wholesalers, they really tend to underestimate repairs. And again, that's totally fine. We're, you know, this is a business and we're all learning, and that's totally fine. But I like to break it down like, hey, this is how much we have to pay for everything. Cause then it makes sense. If I just throw out a number, you know, repair is going to be 50K. Like, what? No way. 50K? How'd you get there? And then if you break it down like roof, flooring, kitchen, boom, 50K.
Yeah, that's really good. And you're right. Wholesalers, we can be accused of just throwing out, you know, hey, it's a $30,000 rehab. And you're kind of just like broad stroking, very rough number. That 30 could easily be 50. So it seems like your approach with wholesalers, man, is very friendly, very like, hey, we're working this deal as partners versus, it's interesting. I never heard anybody quite put it that way, that sometimes relationships between wholesalers and rehabbers can be somewhat combative or adversarial versus working as partners. When people push back on some of your numbers, if that happens, how do you handle it?
I don't know if people push back on the numbers.
Okay.
It hasn't happened recently. It doesn't feel like it. Because if I'm transparent, again, because I give them, it's a dialogue. It's not a monologue. It's a dialogue where like, hey, this is what I got for ARV. Hey, this is what I got for repairs. So we can break it down that way. So it's rarely pushback. There might be some, it might be like positive pushback where they say like, hey, I have it at that number, or hey, the numbers are tight for me. I need to make X for this to make sense for me. So I've done deals like that before. Like there was one where I had to be at 60 and they're like, hey, we have it at 60. So I'm like, oh shoot. Okay. Well, this isn't going to, you know, that's not going to work. You need to make money on this. So I think we tried to buy it at 65, something like that, just to give them some space, just to compensate them. The reason, the real like framework principles behind this is you want to build relationships. So why do you want to build relationships? Because as you do this more and more, it's not just this deal. It's like, what's the deal next month or next quarter or next year? So to be able to get an additional deal from a wholesaler per year is huge, because we typically make, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 on a fix and flip. So like to have that good relationship. So maybe I make, you know, 2, 3, 5,000 less on this one, but what about the next one, the next one, the next one? We have that long-term thinking.
Yep. Yeah. No, I love it, man. And people sometimes operate in business with short-term thinking, thinking about today's dollar versus thinking about, you know, the lifetime of the relationship. One thing I do want to add that kind of, you know, just hit me between the eyes, that I think sometimes wholesalers and rehabbers are leaving money on the table. Here's what I mean by that. You just used an example, Victor, where you said, hey, you need to be at 60, but the wholesaler has it at 60. I find that a lot of people, if the rehabber, if he can't get a better number, he'll walk away from the deal. And sometimes the wholesaler will let that rehabber walk, even when they don't have any other buyers. What we have done in the past is if we can't get a better price from our seller as the wholesaler, we've gone to rehabbers and say, hey, here's what we would propose. We can't get the seller any lower, but what if we partnered on this deal? You closed on it at our contract price, and then we got a percentage on the back end once you sold, right? So it could be 10, 20%. Now, obviously the margin and the numbers still have to make sense for the rehabber. But conversely, if you really want the deal as a rehabber, you know, why don't you offer to give up a piece of the back end? It could be 10%, 20% if the numbers make sense. And if there's margin, that's a way to make a deal happen where others would walk away from it.
Oh, I like it. I really like it. That's really cool. I think the thing there I want to add is like just to have that dialogue and just to be talking to the person on that level, because to further what I was saying, like if it's combative, that conversation is never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But if it's cooperative, like if you're friendly, you can have that discussion like, hey, this is what we have it at. You know, this is what we need to be at. How do we make this work? So everyone wins, because that's the thing. Like everyone can win in this game in real estate. Like it's not I win, you lose. It's like win, 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 win. Everyone's winning. So that's the key here. So you got to have that like mindset when it comes to this.
100%. It's not a zero sum game in real estate. Yeah, you're 100% right. Let me ask you this, Victor. What percentage of your deals that you're closing today come from wholesalers versus the one that you source yourself?
So it's 50-50. So about half.
Half and half. Okay. And then what are you doing to source your own deals?
So it's a mix of things. So it's like kind of like SEO I've been doing. Been doing some cool Facebook stuff, like posting in like Facebook groups. You get some leads that way, which is pretty neat. Some referrals, that's happened too. What else? A little bit of cold calling, just to kind of mix it up. But then I use some like online digital like lead services. Like they send you leads and you can close them. So I've been pretty valuable.
Got it. Two questions. Let me actually start there. Do you mind sharing, because people are listening from this all across the country, what online lead sources have you found? Because we've done those too, where we pay X amount of dollars per lead. It just comes into your inbox, you know? So do you mind sharing some of those resources?
Sure. So giving away the secret sauce, but no, I'm kidding. You're good.
That's what we do here on the show, my man.
No, you're good. So there's one that I really like, and that's the main one I use. So it's needtosellmyhousefast.com. Okay. And it depends. So what you do, you pay for leads based on the county. So me in Alachua County, I think it's like $300 a lead. And probably after the show, it's going to go up because everyone starts using it. But then Levy County, which is the one I do a little bit next door, it's about $75. So depending on the county, you pay per lead.
Yeah.
And it's roughly, this is just rough average numbers, 1 in 8 leads, you know, you can close. So that's the average. It might be number 5 that hits, might be number 10. I'm actually closing one today, or closed one today, excuse me, that came from that source. That was exciting. But that's typically how it works. And if you're a fix and flipper, like it makes sense. So let's say you pay 300 lead, it takes 8 leads. So that's 2,400. So would you spend 2,400 to make, you know, 30 grand potentially?
All day long and every day on Sunday. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I appreciate that. And actually, let's go ahead and mention it now. So Victor also has a free Facebook group at Six Figure House Flipper. You mentioned that, there you go, right behind you. You mentioned that you have people bringing you some opportunities and some deals from your Facebook group.
Once in a while, yeah. So I like to flip, fix and flip locally as much as possible. So yep, it happens somewhat often. I actually looked at a house this morning. Someone sent it to me. It's like, hey, you know, I want to, this wholesaler has a house. You know, do you think it has potential? That's another good thing. So I've had some success kind of with referrals to go down that rabbit hole, like paying like $1,000 for a referral that we close on. So there's one house we are rehabbing and like started talking to the neighbor. The neighbor says like, oh, there's a guy down the street who wanted to sell his house. And yeah. I was like, okay. So I connected with him and that became a deal. So I paid him $1,000 and that was a deal. So that kind of referral. So just to, if there's like one overarching theme, it's like being friendly, talking to people, saying like, hey, this is what I do. And just making it clear, like, here's the benefit for you, here's the benefit for me, just so everyone knows what's going on.
Yeah. I like the way that you put that, here's the benefit for you, because, you know, I learned when I got in this business in 2005, somebody taught me that the radio acronym, WIIFM, you know, what's in it for me? And that's most of the time, that's what people care about. And so too many people talk in terms of features instead of talking in terms of benefits. It sounds like that coupled with your friendly approach. I also see that, I get the sense you do a pretty good job of branding and marketing yourself. You got the polo, you got the six-figure house flipper, the neon sign behind you. So yeah, man, no, I shared, this was probably years ago. This is kind of a funny story, Victor. I was wearing a We Buy Houses shirt, nothing fancy, just a We Buy Houses shirt, and it had my phone number, and I ordered Chicken Kitchen. This was, I don't know, man, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I ordered Chicken Kitchen. So the guy knocks on the door. I think this was even before Uber Eats and all that. The guy knocks on the door and he gives me the bag of food. And as I'm about to close the door, he says, you buy houses? And I said, I do. Forgetting I was wearing my shirt, but he kind of caught me off guard, like my Chicken Kitchen guy. I said, yeah, I do. This is somebody, you know, I started talking to him. He's like, oh, that's interesting, you know, because we're looking for a rehab now. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I mean, it's possible, but you know, he's a delivery guy. Like I didn't think too much of it, but I was like, okay. So he goes, yeah, I actually happen to own this Chicken Kitchen and several others. And then we start talking. At that moment, we were marketing our most expensive wholesale deal. I think we were asking $369,000 for a property that was probably worth like $530,000, $540,000. That's a pretty high wholesale deal for us. He ended up being the buyer for that property. So just because of a t-shirt that said, we buy houses, just a random chance, like you just never know where you're going to connect with people.
No, I like it. So the branding really helps. I like the story, by the way. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get a deal from the shirt. That'll be a good one. So the reason I wear the shirts, I wear these like every day and I have like 5 of them in my closet. And the reason I wear it is because I work from home a lot. And like when I typically work from home before I had the shirts, like I'd put on like a baggy t-shirt and like cruddy shorts. And then that would be kind of my work attitude for the entire day. Like, oh, whatever, you know, laissez-faire, you're relaxed, whatever. So then I started to like wear like nicer clothes and polos, and it was basically polo and jeans. And I started to have that mentality like, hey, this is a business. Hey, this is real. I got to be professional, especially if you're like meeting homeowners in their house. Like you got to be respectful. You can't be like all dirty, you know, showing up with spaghetti sauce on your shirt. You know, you got to be respectful for them and look professional. You're buying their house potentially. And that's typically like the biggest sale of a person's life. You got to respect that.
Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from. I will say that the flip side is I know quite a few people that they're unapologetically who they are. And they just like, I know people that will show up to, you know, homeowner appointments in flip-flops and cargo shorts. And they're like, dude, this is me. Like, you know, I guess it works for them. Who knows? It'd be interesting split test to see like the real professional approach versus being just, I don't know, but I hear where you're coming from, man. I used to have the same mentality. And to a certain degree, I still do. If I go on an appointment, I'm not in a t-shirt and shorts. I get where you're coming from. So let me ask you this, man. I want to get into some of the battles that you've been through, and I want to see some of the scars. So building this business over the last couple of years, what would you say, does anything jump out at you as your biggest failure and or the worst deal you've ever done?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I had a really good lesson recently. So we did like a mobile home deal in like this little rural part of like in the area. And like we ended up making money. We made like, I think 11,000, but it was just not worth the hassle. I don't know if you've had those deals before. Like it's so much work and see have like a little thing. I think a good lesson is like sometimes the best deals you do are the deals you don't do. So if I were to do that deal again, I probably wouldn't do it. Like if I had the option, like, hey, do you want to do this deal again? I would be like, yeah, no, I'm good. It was one of those things. So part of like to answer an earlier question you asked, like at the very beginning of the interview. So like the first year I did 2 flips, second year did 8 flips, then did 20, then 30. Because I was growing so fast, like I would just try to buy everything versus, you know, just try to like be a little more diligent. And because of that, I picked up this deal. I sold it a while ago, but it was just one of those, like, well, I wouldn't do it again. Because there's just so much hassle. That's kind of the parting words of wisdom, or like the wisdom I want to add here, where like, yes, I know like you want to get a deal, but don't try to like force a deal to happen. Like if you have to really, really force it, like, you know, everything has to go perfect for it to be a deal. Right. It's not going to be a deal at the end of the day, and you're going to regret it because things happen. It always takes longer than you want. You know, always costs more than you want when it comes to renovation. Before Corona, before the market got crazy hot, it was also possible for you to sell the house for less than you wanted. In terms of listing price, that's not the case anymore, but
not at all.
That's the biggest thing. Like, yes, it's awesome to do deals, but make sure you're doing like the right deals.
That's right. And I think I'd like to recap that by saying what you said. What I would carve out from that, you know, what you just shared is that sometimes the best deals you do are the ones you don't do. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, Vic. I find there's a fine line between being persistent and not giving up versus like trying to fit a square into a circle, you know? So I think people need to find that balance. But yeah, sometimes when everything has to break right for the deal to make sense, that's not the deal to get involved in. In fact, years ago, a mentor of mine told me, when I look at an opportunity, I'm trying to find ways to kill it. If I can't kill it, that's the one to go after.
Whoa, I like it. That's a really good, I like that, like you switch it, you flip it on its head. And it's like, no, it's not reasons to do it, it's reasons not to do it. Hey,
yeah, nice. A little bit of a paradigm shift. So, dude, tell me about the best deal you've done and how you found it, how you sourced it.
So best deal, so it was about a 64K net profit flip, which is good. And just to give more context for Gainesville, like we're typically buying below 100,000 and selling for above 100,000. That's like roughly, because it's a smaller market. It's not like a Miami where you can sell, you know, $500,000 house. So that's typically the numbers. So 64K over here is like a really good deal. So we were happy with that. Got it from a wholesaler/referral. And like she got a hold of us, so she reached out to us and she's like, hey, I've heard you buy houses. I got this house. I want to take a look at it. And took a look at it. We were able to take it down. So we bought the house. There was a mold problem. We've dealt with mold before, mold remediation. We kind of got scared because like the first quote we got was like 20 grand. And like the second quote we got was like 15 grand. And that was going to like really affect the deal. So at that point we're thinking like, maybe we shouldn't even do this deal. Like maybe we should just, the neighbor next door like wanted to buy it from us. He's like, hey, I'll buy it for like 5,000 more than you want to sell it for, than you bought it for, right? Because we told them like, hey, we bought it for, I think we ended up buying it for like 73. So they're like, hey, I'll buy it for like 78 is what he was saying. So at that point we're like seriously considering like, maybe we should just sell it, get rid of it. This mold thing was going to be a bigger hassle than expected. It's like, oh, I don't know. We got other deals going. Maybe we shouldn't just, you know, pass on this one. Ended up not doing that. And we got a third mold remediation quote. It's like 6 grand. It's like, okay, well, you know, 6 grand, that's not bad. Let's just move forward. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. And then ended up being our best deal. So we almost passed on our best deal. And the neighbor kind of almost talked us into it, almost kind of like scared us out of the deal. Said, hey, the house has had a lot of issues and like it has mold and, you know, mold's expensive. And he had a mold restoration company. So that was his kind of in. That's how, you know, he was going to save money on that. It ended up being our best deal. So glad we did.
And 64 grand is a big deal in most parts of the country, unless maybe you're in California or somewhere in the West Coast. But in Gainesville, that's probably like a 2-3x, you know, what we see here as far as like, I mean, that's big, big deal, especially in a small town. So
yeah. So that our typical like average net profit is about 30K. Okay. So that's part of the reason we do a little more volume, because you know, maybe if you're in like a bigger city, you can make, you know, 50K, 100K on a flip, which is great. But we, you know, less accessible here. So the numbers on that one, if your listeners are curious, so we bought it for about 73. I think we put about 50 into it, 50, and then we sold it for 200.
Got it.
So, yeah, really good deal.
Let me transition the show here and go in a little bit of a different direction. What are your thoughts, man, on where we're at as a market? You know, so we'll talk kind of big picture macro right now, like how you see the real estate market, just so that it benefits people listening. And obviously, you don't have a crystal ball. You know, nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. But just based on where certain economic factors now, and now that the election's behind us and interest rates are so low at the time of this recording, like, where do you think we're going as a real estate market?
So I want to preface everything I'm saying with the following. So fix and flipping is actually really lucky, really easy once you distill it to its basis. So like very easy, like what we're doing with fix and flipping or wholesaling, we're buying low, we're selling high. That's it. Mm-hmm. We're buying low, we're selling high. So that in mind, I've talked to a ton of people who've been successful in 08, 09, you know, 2010 during that downturn. That's all I did. You know, bought low, sold high. And the highs were just different. Like the numbers and the ranges were a little bit different, but they're still doing deals. So that in mind, that's how I want to preface that. With how I see everything going, I don't think it's going to be like a different, like an 08, 09. I think it's going to be more like a gradual cool down, because we can't have this rapid price appreciation for much longer, because people are just going to be priced out of the market. Like you can't have 10%, you know, price appreciation houses and then wages grow, you know, 2% or 3%. Right. Like it's just going to, you know, where people just can't afford the house anymore. And that's not helpful. So what I think is happening, it's just going to cool down. I think we've actually started to see that already. So last, you know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, if you look at like mortgage demand, it's actually slowly dropping. If you look at lumber prices, actually slowly dropping. So it's one of those things where I think the hottest it's ever been in terms of market, I think was about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and it's kind of slowing down a little bit. It's still a hot market, don't get me wrong. Or is maybe, you know, each house gets 15 offers and now each house gets 12 offers. So it's still hot as hell, but like it's slowing down. That's how I see it. A couple other things to think about in the future is like interest rates going up, just with the Fed and where they're at in terms of monetary policy and inflation and all that stuff. Like they might kick up that rate, which real estate's interest sensitive. So I'm just looking at all these things, but I want to bring it back to like the basics. It's real estate. It's fix and flipping. We're buying low. We're selling high. That's literally all it is. It's always going to exist. I don't see real estate going anywhere anytime soon. People still want to live in houses, but just buying low, selling high, and keeping that in mind. And you can just like get the rest out of your mind, because there's a million variables out there. You know, what about the Fed? What about interest rates? What about the president? What about, you know, who's in power? Really want to focus on the basics.
That's right. And then to take it down, to drill down and go, you know, micro level, I think it's really important, as you know, Victor, to, you know, monitor inventory levels, days on market. I like talking to people that have been through numerous real estate cycles because they've experienced it. And I like to gain the perspective of, you know, realtors, successful realtors and investors that have been in the business 20 plus years and, you know, kind of get a gauge on how people are thinking. So there's always economic factors you can look at, and that you can also look at local things as well that can really help you. Because with real estate, it's not like the stock market. It's not just going to fall off a cliff. There's factors. Yeah. There's leading and lagging indicators. So very cool, man. Well, dude, as we start to kind of transition down to the show here, I want to do a little reversal. I usually ask a question, rewind the clock, knowing everything you know now, like what's the one thing you wish you knew back then? But dude, you're a young guy. I'm going to reverse it. I'm going to say fast forward 20 years. What is something you would tell, I'm guessing, the 40-something or 50-something-year-old Victor?
Ooh, good. I haven't been asked that one before. That's a good one. What would I ask the 40-year-old Victor? What would I ask him?
Sorry to put you on the spot, man. I know that's a difficult one.
No, that's a good one. I would ask him like, hey, are you still at it? Like, are you still in the game? Are you still out there doing the real estate thing? I had a thought recently. I don't know what you would call it. It's better to have 20% growth. No, I think it's what? I think it's better to have 20% growth for 50 years than it is to have 90% growth for a decade. So in your head, you might think like, oh, if I double every year for, or almost double every year for a decade, you know, how far would I be ahead? But if, like, with compounding and math and all that stuff, so if you have grow at that 20% for 50 years, you're actually way ahead. You're multiples ahead of that other one. So I think the biggest thing and my biggest concern is, like, hey, I need to be at this in the future. So it's not just, okay, I had a great, you know, 20s or a great 30s. It's like, where am I at? Am I doing more? And am I enjoying it? So that's why I'd center the question around, like, hey, are you still in the game? You know, are we still doing this? Is this still happening? So that'd probably be my question to myself.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Awesome. Awesome. Well, Victor, where do people connect with you? Where can people learn more about everything that you have going on in the real estate space, you know, and otherwise?
Yeah, no, for sure. So I'm pretty active on Facebook. So if you look me up, Victor Juracek, you should find me on Facebook. I also have a free Facebook group, Six Figure House Flipper, as a heads up. So I do mentor people, like, how to get started fixing and flipping nationwide. So if you're interested in that, great. You know, we can have that conversation. If you're just interested in the free resources I put in the Facebook group, like, I put scripts, you know, purchase agreement templates. I put what deals I'm working on, like deal breakdowns, like just more detail following, you know, our conversation here. So Six Figure House Flippers, that free Facebook group.
Very cool, man. Well, hey, I appreciate you reaching out to me. I'm glad we were able to do this. Continue to push forward and do everything you're doing on social and just kind of sharing your projects. And so I see the growth year over year for you, man. And you're young, you're hungry. And I like the fact that you're also helping people. So appreciate you coming on here. And dude, I think it was, I don't know that we've ever really spoken about the relationship between wholesaler and rehabber. And I like the fact how you brought that around to it being cooperative, I think is the word you use, versus combative. Mm-hmm. Something tells me that might sneak its way into the title of this show, but that's really good, dude.
No, I'm glad it was helpful. I'm glad it was helpful for your audience as well.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much. Make sure that you are subscribed to the Flip Empire Show so you're notified every Monday and Thursday morning when new shows get released. Again, so Victor and I are connected through our good friend Chris Chico. If you have any interest in checking out his course where he teaches you how to wholesale nationwide and how to generate Facebook and or motivated seller leads through social media, Facebook, Instagram, online, flipempire.com/leads. And other than that, Victor, awesome connecting with you, man. Thanks for coming on here and sharing. And we will see you guys on the next one. Hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, you know, I've had a lot of people recently reach out to me wanting to learn more about Ascend, wanting to understand how the mastermind component works, how the coaching relationship works. And so right now we're actually on a waiting list. But what I would encourage you to do is, if you think you're the right fit and you think you could benefit from being a part of our community, head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, watch the short video, and then just click the apply to join button below. And then we'll be in contact with you if and when a spot opens up. So really appreciate you listening to Flip Empire here. And I look forward to connecting with you on the next show. Take care.